A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one, and honestly, it's the kind of thing you don't realize is broken until you're standing in it. He's been buying gear for a move. Industrial platform trolleys, moving dollies, that kind of thing, and naturally looked at secondhand options first. What he found was a 700 shekel trolley listed for 650. No warranty, no receipt, you drive 40 minutes to some guy's storage unit, and the seller genuinely thinks that's a fair deal.
50 shekels of savings. That's the gap. 50 shekels, and the buyer is supposed to absorb all the risk, all the coordination time, all the uncertainty about whether the wheels are about to fall off.
It's a below minimum wage hourly rate for the round trip alone. Before you even factor in the part where you show up and the guy says he only brought half the cash, which by the way actually happened to Daniel with a fridge.
That's a classic move. The, oh no, I only have half in my pocket. Negotiation tactic. It exploits seller fatigue, especially during a move when you're exhausted and just want the thing gone. And it works, because the alternative is keeping a fridge you already mentally said goodbye to.
This is the part nobody in the circular economy conversation seems to want to talk about. We're all supposed to be buying secondhand, extending product lifespans, keeping things out of landfills. But the actual experience of buying or selling used durable goods on these platforms hasn't improved in a decade. Facebook Marketplace, Craigslist, Yad too, same friction, same trust deficits, same pricing that makes no economic sense.
It's not just a local Israeli thing. A 2023 analysis of Facebook Marketplace found 40% of used electronics listings were priced within 10% of retail. For something used, with no warranty, and who knows what kind of wear.
The seller anchors to what they paid. The buyer calculates the true cost, including all the hidden friction, and neither can understand why the other side is being unreasonable. The item sits unsold for weeks, while somewhere a factory stamps out a brand new one.
Here's the twist Daniel raised, which I think is under-discussed. He sometimes buys new specifically because he wants to own something for a long time. The sustainability-minded consumer ends up buying new because the secondhand market is too broken to trust. That's a perverse outcome.
It's the sustainability paradox. The circular economy loses twice. The used item doesn't get sold, and a new item gets manufactured. All because the marketplace can't solve basic coordination and trust problems.
Let's unpack what's actually going on. This isn't just about annoying transactions. It's about a market that is structurally broken, and understanding why requires looking at some specific mechanisms economists have been studying for decades.
What makes this worth a full episode is that the gap is actually widening. Inflation pushes more people towards circular consumption. Sustainability awareness is higher than ever, but the platforms haven't evolved. The promise and the reality are moving in opposite directions.
Clothing resale actually works reasonably well. Dedicated apps, standardized processes, items are easy to inspect, and low liability. But the moment you move to durable goods, tools, appliances, furniture, electronics, the whole thing falls apart. The difference comes down to standardization, inspection feasibility, and liability risk.
Daniel's wife sold a TV once. The buyer called 5 minutes after leaving, really aggressive, insisting it wasn't IoT connected when it was. The guy had just misread the menu. That's the kind of post-transaction headache that makes you think twice about ever listing anything again.
Even giving things away for free generates friction. People don't show up, they demand videos from every angle, they ask you to hold items, and then ghost. The most altruistic act generates some of the highest coordination costs. It's a free rider problem baked into the design.
The question Daniel's really asking is, what would a secondhand marketplace look like if it actually worked for both sides? And to answer that, we need to first understand exactly why the current ones fail so consistently.
The core of it, the thing that makes this a multi-sided failure, is that the platforms themselves are designed around the wrong metric. Yad Do, Facebook Marketplace, Craigslist. They optimize for listing volume. They make money when people list things, not when transactions actually close successfully.
Which means there's no incentive to solve the pricing problem. A listing priced at 95% of retail that sits for 6 months is still a listing, still generating ad views, still making the platform look active. The fact that nobody ever buys it is not a problem for them.
The platform's business model is fundamentally misaligned with the user's goal. The user wants a successful transaction. The platform wants engagement. Those are not the same thing.
You end up with what Daniel described, a marketplace that feels like a graveyard of overpriced optimism. Sellers who believe their used trolley is worth $650 because they paid $700 3 years ago. Buyers who realize the effective discount after time, travel, and risk is basically zero. And a platform with no reason to tell either side they're wrong.
Then there's the trust dimension, which is actually the harder problem. Even if sellers magically started listing at 40 or 50% of retail, you still have information asymmetry. The seller knows whether the motor on that drill has been overheating. The buyer doesn't, and there's no standardized way to verify condition.
That's why clothing resale has a structural advantage. A shirt is a shirt. You can see the stains, check the seams. The inspection cost is near zero. But a platform trolley, the bearings could be shot, the welds hairline cracked, and you won't know until you've loaded 300 kilos onto it.
The liability risk is different too. If a used shirt falls apart, you're out maybe 50 shekels. If a used power tool fails catastrophically, someone could get hurt. The stakes change how people behave. They demand deeper discounts to compensate for risk they can't properly assess.
You've got three things working against you simultaneously. Pricing detached from market reality because sellers anchor to what they paid. Transaction friction that eats up whatever discount does exist. And a trust deficit that makes buyers rationally discount every listing to protect against hidden defects.
The trust deficit creates a downward spiral. Buyers assume every used item has hidden problems, so they'll only pay lemon prices. Sellers with good items look at those offers and pull out of the market entirely. What's left is exactly what Akerlof predicted in 1970. The bad drives out the good.
The guy selling a well-maintained trolley for a fair price gets buried under 50 listings from people who think their beat-up equipment is worth near retail. The buyer can't tell the difference, so they either lowball everyone or give up and buy new.
This is where Daniel's sustainability paradox really bites. The person who wants to do the right thing looks at this marketplace and concludes, rationally, that buying new is the better decision. Not because they don't care, but because the marketplace makes caring expensive and unpleasant.
It's almost like the circular economy has a UX problem. We've spent decades designing supply chains and retail experiences that make buying new frictionless. One click, free shipping, 30-day returns, manufacturer warranty. Then we tell people to buy used instead and hand them a platform where they have to negotiate with strangers, drive across town, inspect items themselves, and assume all the risk.
The experience gap is enormous, and it's not fixable by just asking people to be more patient. The platforms need to actually do something, verify condition, hold payments in escrow, provide standardized grading, mediate disputes. But they don't, because none of that generates ad revenue.
What we're really talking about is a market engineered for the wrong outcome, and then we're surprised when it fails. The question isn't why people are bad at buying and selling used goods. It's why we've accepted platform designs that set everyone up to fail.
Let's walk through the mechanisms. The first is the endowment effect, and this is where the pricing insanity comes from. Kahneman, Netsch, and Thaler demonstrated back in 1990. Once you own something, you value it 1.5 to 2 times higher than before you owned it.
The seller isn't being greedy. They're being human. Their brain is pricing in memories of the purchase, the research they did, the feeling of unboxing it. Then they anchor to the original price. They paid 700 shekels, so 650 feels like a deal. What they don't see is that the buyer is anchoring to alternatives. What else can I get for 650? Including new with a warranty.
That 40% of used electronics within 10% of retail, that's not a few delusional sellers. That's a systematic cognitive distortion playing out across millions of listings. And it gets worse with items that have emotional weight. The drill you use to build your kid's bookshelf. The seller is pricing the story, and the buyer just sees a used drill.
Which brings us to mechanism 2, the hassle tax. Let's actually do the math on Daniel's 50 shekel trolley saving.
40-minute round trip. Fuel costs may be 15 shekels, so now you're saving 35. Coordination, half an hour of messaging. Inspection, another 15 minutes. That's about an hour and a half invested for 35 shekels of net savings. An effective hourly wage significantly below minimum wage.
You haven't priced in the risk yet. No warranty, no return policy. If the wheel seize up in week 2, you've lost the entire 650 in the tie. The buyer is being asked to take a worse than minimum wage gamble on a stranger's honesty.
This is why the effective discount needed to make secondhand rational is often 40 to 60% off retail. The hidden costs are enormous, and most sellers never account for them because they're not the ones paying them.
Then there's the fridge negotiation. The buyer shows up with half the cash. That's a calculated exploitation of the holdup problem. Once the seller has invested time to coordinate, clear space, maybe move the fridge to the doorway, the cost of walking away is suddenly very high.
The seller has sunk costs in the transaction itself. The buyer knows this. Showing up with half the money shifts all the leverage. Daniel was moving, he was exhausted, he took the half. That's exactly what the tactic counts on. Seller fatigue is a pricing mechanism. It's predatory, but it works because the platform offers zero protection.
Now, the third mechanism is the one Akerlof won a Nobel for, the lemons problem. This is where the trust deficit becomes self-reinforcing.
The seller knows if their trolley has a subtle crack in the frame. The buyer does it and can't easily find out. So the buyer, being rational, assumes some probability of hidden defects and discounts accordingly, offering, say, 300 shekels for a trolley that might be worth 500 if certifiably good.
The seller with the good trolley looks at that offer and says, forget it. They pull their listing. The seller with the cracked frame, though 300 is great for a damaged item, they'll take it.
Now the market has one more lemon and one fewer good item. The average quality drops. Buyers notice, discount further, more good sellers withdraw. The spiral continues until the market is mostly junk, exactly what people complain about on Yadto.
It's not that good used items don't exist. It's that the platform gives buyers no way to identify them, so they get priced out by the seller's rational unwillingness to accept lemon prices for a non-lemon item.
This is where the platform's incentive problem becomes catastrophic. If Yadto verified condition, they could break the spiral. But verification costs money. Dispute resolution costs money. And they don't make money on completed transactions. They make money on listings and views. The lemon spiral is actually neutral for their business model. It might even be positive. More listings, more churn, more page refreshes.
The final mechanism is the free rider problem in giveaways. Daniel mentioned listing things for free and still getting demands for videos from every angle. That's a selection effect.
A free listing attracts everyone, including the least committed, most entitled potential takers. The person who needs the item and would show up promptly is competing with 50 people who clicked interested on impulse and will ghost you. The giver has no way to screen for reliability.
The demands for extra photos, the requests to hold items, the no-shows, those are concentrated among people who have the lowest cost for wasting your time, because they have no skin in the game. There's no deposit, no reputation at stake.
It's the paradox of free. The most generous act generates the highest ratio of friction to transaction value. You're doing unpaid customer service for the privilege of losing an item. After a couple of those experiences, people just throw things in the trash instead. The exact opposite of what the circular economy needs.
The thing that connects all four mechanisms, endowment pricing, the hassle tax, the lemon spiral, and the free rider problem, is that they're all invisible to the platform. The platform sees a listing was created. It doesn't see that the transaction failed, or that the seller got exploited, or that the buyer drove 40 minutes for a damaged item. The dashboard looks great. The human experience is a disaster, and what gets measured gets optimized.
When we ask why the secondhand market stays broken, the answer isn't that people are irrational. It's that the platforms are rationally responding to their own incentives, which have nothing to do with successful transactions.
Which brings us to the knock-on effect. Daniel buys new because he wants to own something for a long time. The sustainability-minded consumer is pushed away from the circular economy by the dysfunction of the very marketplace that's supposed to enable it.
The circular economy loses twice. The original item sits unsold or gets thrown away, and a new item gets manufactured to replace it. Waste on one side, new resource extraction on the other, all because the transaction couldn't clear.
This is what sustainability advocates rarely grapple with. Extending product lifespan through reuse is supposed to be the highest leverage intervention, far better than recycling. But reuse requires a functioning marketplace, and we've spent decades optimizing for new retail while leaving peer-to-peer to fend for itself.
Contrast that with a platform whose revenue depends on completed transactions. eBay takes a cut when something sells, so they have some reason to care about pricing accuracy and trust. But even eBay's feedback system has degraded. When 99% positive ratings are the norm, the signal is gone. Buyers are afraid to leave honest negative feedback because sellers can retaliate.
The RealReal tried to solve this for luxury goods by centralizing everything. Authentication, photography, pricing, shipping. But the commission runs up to 60%. That works for a $2,000 handbag. It doesn't work for a 700 shekel platform trolley. The economics of intermediation collapse as item value drops.
You've got this missing middle. On one end, peer-to-peer platforms with zero intermediation and maximum friction. On the other, professional refurbishers with high trust and high prices. Most durable goods fall into the gap between them.
A few models are starting to fill it. Backmarket for refurbished electronics. Standardized grading, fair, good, excellent, and a one-year warranty. The warranty transfers risk from buyer to platform. They've grown 300% since 2020. People want to buy used when the trust problem is actually solved.
Japan's book off chain is even more interesting for lower value goods. They buy used books, media, electronics, and grade everything, A, B, C, D, with fixed pricing per grade. You walk in, they scan your items, they hand you cash. No negotiation, no listing photos, no waiting. The friction is near zero for the seller, and the grading system solves the lemons problem. A B-grade item has a clear, standardized definition.
That's the model Yad2 should be studying. Book off, not Craigslist. But it requires the platform to actually intermediate, to hold inventory, grade condition, set prices. That's a fundamentally different business than selling ad space next to listings.
Tool libraries take a completely different approach. They eliminate the transaction entirely. The Berkeley Tool Lending Library has over 90% utilization rates. You borrow a tool, use it, return it. No ownership transfer, no pricing negotiation, no lemons problem because the library maintains the tools.
For the equipment Daniel was buying, moving dollies, platform trolleys, that model makes enormous sense. How often do you actually need a heavy-duty trolley? Once every few years during a move? The rest of the time, it's taking up storage space. The utilization rate on individually owned specialized tools is abysmal.
If we're thinking about what a well-designed marketplace requires, I think there are five features that keep coming up across the successful models. Standardized condition grading with required photo angles. Escrow or payment holding to prevent no-shows and the half-the-cash routine. Algorithmic pricing based on actual sold data, not listed prices. Verified seller badges tied to transaction history. An integration with repair and refurbishment services. Imagine listing a used drill and having the option to pay 50 shekels for a certified inspection and 6-month warranty.
None of this is technically difficult. Standardized grading exists. Sold price data exists. The barrier isn't technology. It's that the dominant platforms have business models actively disincentivized from implementing any of it.
The circular economy won't scale on goodwill and environmental concern. It needs infrastructure, the same kind we built for new retail over decades. Until someone builds a platform where incentives align with successful reuse, buying new will remain the rational choice for conscientious consumers. That's a failure of design, not of consumer will.
Let's get practical. If you're a seller and you actually want the thing gone, the single most important shift is pricing. 40 to 60% of retail for durable goods, not 95.
I know that stings. The endowment effect is real, but use sold listings as your benchmark, not active listings. Active listings are just other people making the same pricing mistake. Sold listings tell you what buyers actually paid.
Include detailed photos. Show the wear points, the scratches, the labels. The buyer is already assuming hidden defects. The more you show, the less room their imagination has to fill in disaster scenarios. And write honest condition notes. Hiding flaws doesn't get you a better price. It just makes the buyer discount everything you say.
For buyers, calculate your true cost before you message the seller. Time, travel, inspection, risk, no warranty. If the effective discount isn't at least 40%, buying new is probably the rational move. You're not being wasteful. You're responding to a marketplace that hasn't earned your participation, and use platforms with buyer protection, even for local transactions. PayPal goods and services, a credit card, something that gives you recourse.
For the platform designers and policymakers listening, the circular economy needs infrastructure. Standardized grading, escrow, dispute resolution, integration with repair services. These are not nice to haves. They're the difference between a marketplace that clears transactions and one that clears browser history.
Israel's Yad 2 could learn directly from Japan's book-off model. Standardized ABC degrading with fixed pricing per grade. No negotiation, no haggling, no showing up with half the cash. The friction collapses because the ambiguity collapses.
For the sustainability-minded, the Daniel position of wanting to do the right thing but finding the marketplace makes it punishing. Consider whether you need to own the thing at all. Tool libraries, equipment rental, buy-nothing groups with structured coordination, scheduled pickup windows, no-contact drop-off. These reduce transaction friction by design because they eliminate the pricing and trust problems entirely.
The buy-nothing group model is underrated if you add structure. Instead of free, first-come, first-served, message me for address, you do, available Thursday between 6 and 8, porch pickup, first-confirmed, gets it. That tiny bit of coordination design filters out the ghosts and the video demanders.
For items you do want to own long-term, buying new with a warranty isn't a sustainability failure. It's a rational response to a market gap. The failure is that there's no certified refurbished option with a warranty for that category. Back market proved the model works for electronics. Someone needs to build back market for tools, for appliances, for the rest of the durable goods universe.
The through line across all of this is that the problem isn't you. It's not that you're bad at selling, or too picky as a buyer, or insufficiently committed to the planet. The system is designed for listing volume, not transaction success, and you're experiencing the entirely predictable result of that design choice.
Price at 40 to 60% if you're selling. Calculate the true cost if you're buying. Demand better infrastructure if you're building or regulating platforms. And if the marketplace still doesn't work, recognize that walking away and buying new is a critique of the system, not a personal moral failing. To wrap up, I want to leave you with one open question. We've talked about standardized grading, escrow, verified sellers, all infrastructure that requires humans to build and maintain it. But what if AI could collapse the trust problem automatically?
Computer vision models can already assess product condition from photos, identifying scratches, screen cracks, wear patterns, with accuracy approaching human inspectors. Combine that with automated pricing based on actual sold data, and you could theoretically list an item by taking 6 photos and letting the platform handle the rest. The phone in your pocket becomes the inspector, the appraiser, and the escrow agent.
Here's my skepticism. AI solves the information asymmetry. It doesn't solve the coordination friction. You still have to message a stranger, arrange a time, drive somewhere, hope they show up. The human layer of the hassle tax remains untouched.
Unless the platform handles that too. Scheduled pickup windows, third-party local delivery, locker-based handoff like Amazon's model. At that point, you're not building a classified site, you're building a logistics company for used goods.
The other wild card is IoT. As more products ship with connectivity, usage hours tracked, charge cycles logged, maintenance history recorded, the secondhand market could become radically more transparent. Imagine scanning a used drill and seeing it's been used for 12 hours total, never overheated, firmware updated last month. The item tells you its own history, no seller honesty required.
It requires manufacturers to open that data to secondary markets, and right now they have every incentive to keep it closed. They'd rather sell you a new drill. John Deere has been fighting farmers for years over who owns the tractor's data. That fight is coming for every connected product.
The open question is this. Will AI-powered grading and IoT transparency finally solve the trust problem, or will the human friction of coordination remain the bottleneck, no matter how good the data gets? I suspect the answer determines whether the circular economy actually scales, or remains a nice idea that doesn't survive contact with a Facebook marketplace listing.
The circular economy isn't just about recycling materials. It's about designing systems where transactions don't feel like a punishment. Right now, buying new is often the rational choice, not because consumers don't care, but because the marketplace hasn't earned their participation. Fix the marketplace, and the sustainability follows, but you have to actually build it.
Now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
During the early medieval period, the Norse settlers of Greenland played a kicking game using a woven ball that may have been an ancestor of sepak takraw. Archaeological evidence suggests the population of players in the eastern settlement alone numbered at least 400 at the game's peak, roughly 15% of the colony's adult population.
400 Norse settlers playing proto-sepak takraw in medieval Greenland.
I have so many questions, and I know none of them will be answered.
This has been My Weird Prompts. Our producer is Hilbert Flemingtop, and we'd love it if you'd share the show with someone who's ever been lowballed on Yad 2. Find every episode at myweirdprompts.com.
I'm Herman Poppleberry.
I'm Korn. We'll be back next time.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.